Welcome back to Nomic's Grand Gaming Adventures, and this week, it's a bonus episode. The first ever, actually. Now, if you haven't listened to the Orwell episode that came out a few days ago, definitely give that a listen. I actually enjoyed it, so don't skip over that one for this one. Granted, listen to this one too. But on this bonus episode, I'm reviewing a game called Celasta, Crown of the Magister. It was developed and published by a company called Tactical Adventures, and currently sits at 92% positive out of 3,400 reviews. So why the bonus episode? I actually backed this game on Kickstarter, and at the time that I came across it on Kickstarter, I had a bad experience with another game that I backed. I'm not going to go into the details about that. But one game kind of fell through. Supposedly it's still being worked on, but I don't have a whole lot of faith. But I decided to back this one around that time that one fell through. I don't remember what tier I backed, but they gave early access to me. I ended up playing it for a few hours during the early access, during one of the original builds. But the company promised that they were going to do at least one save file wipe, meaning that that a patch would not be compatible with the save file, so I chose not to play it. Well, a few weeks ago, I actually read on their Discord that anybody who backed on Kickstarter was being granted a privilege to play day one patch 2.5 weeks early. So I just had to hop on that and try it out. So in theory, I was playing on the patch that had all the content, because again, it's for day one release. They actually released about 10 gigs worth of patches since then, about a week into that 2.5 week period, which actually fixed some of the bugs that I encountered. So I'm going to do my best to try to review this, give it a score, and hopefully I'll give you guys some input if you're looking for this type of game on a day one release. Now, if this does sound like a game that you're interested in, currently on Steam it is 20% off until June 2nd, and that equals about roughly $32 or whatever your currency would be converted. But yeah, let's talk about the game. So this game is highly D&D influenced. They actually use the rule set of 5.1. Now, if somehow you've been living under a rock and you don't know what D&D is, it stands for Dungeons and Dragons, and it's a tabletop experience, usually, where somebody DMs and they create an experience, a story, for a few players to play. Now, that has been attempted before in a bunch of different games. Games like Baldur's Gate, there was a Pathfinder series, which is a similar tabletop experience to D&D, called Pathfinder Kingmaker. There was an Obsidian creation called Pillars of Eternity, which is pretty popular. And there was also Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2. And probably a bunch more, too. But those are the ones that I'm familiar with. So if you've ever played any of those, you'll kind of have an idea what this game's like. It's a top-down view, turn-based tabletop experience. So how the game actually works, most of the time you're running around on a map until you encounter enemies, and then you turn into a turn-based battle system. You can also typically buy stuff from stores, vendors, things like that. And you can also traverse the world map. But before we get into all of that, let's start at the basics. Without giving too much story away, you follow four characters that are pre-generated or four that you decide to make. But it's technically their story and you follow them. Essentially what starts off, and you'll learn this at the very beginning of it, there was a catastrophic event that happens 1,000 years prior to the initial start of the game. Humans and some others run away from old gods and their creations called Sorax, which are basically lizard people. And they flee from their world into this world of Celasta. But by doing so, it creates this rift, this portal, essentially, that lands directly in the Elven Empire and decimates the crap out of it. So 1,000 years later, when you start the game, your four players are looking for a sense of adventure for whatever their reasons are. They're being hired by this group called the Council, which is supposedly a neutral group. I don't know if they ever aren't neutral. I haven't gotten to the end of the game yet. I'm about 40 hours in. And you're recruited as deputies for this council and sent into this old area of the old empire called the Badlands now. That's where the Empire used to be before this rift opened up and destroyed everything. Now it's called the Badlands. Why do people go there? Not only for adventure or stupidity, I suppose, but there's old ruins from the Empire that still have artifacts, different things of treasure. There's just a lot to be made, a lot of history, a lot of lore, and a lot of prize. But it's also super dangerous. Not only do you encounter bandits and other creatures, but yeah, it's not a friendly place. So you get hired as deputies and you're sent off into the Badlands to check one of the council's outposts because they haven't reported in. And that's the beginning of the story, and I'm not going to tell you more at this point because I don't want to spoil anything. I might throw a spoiler thing at the end. So anyway, that's the basic start of the story. So since this copies a little bit from the D&D rule set, there is some aspects from D&D that play into this game. So at the very beginning of the game, you can either, again, play as a pre-generated four-squad group, or you can create your own characters, which is what I did. I made a sorcerer. I don't remember if it's a wizard or a sorcerer class. They only have one in this. A ranger, a rogue, and a paladin. And the cool thing is not only do you get to choose their races, sub-races if they apply, but you also get to choose your background, kind of like D&D, too. So my wizard, or sorcerer, whichever one he is, I don't remember, is an academic, and he's a little self-centered, but not terribly. He doesn't really follow the rules. You get to choose all these kind of background aspects. And then you also get to choose their starting spells and starting cantrips, which, if you've never played this type of game, a cantrip is a spell that they can cast over and over per their turn. A normal spell takes what they call a spell slot. Somebody once described it to me as rounds for a gun. So if you have a magazine that only holds two bullets, consider that being two spell slots. Not a very good description, but you can prime a spell, so you select whatever spells you want, and then you can use one of those spells in one of those slots. After you use it, that slot's used until you get what they call a long rest to recover them. But cantrips can be cast anytime, so you don't have to worry about slots, you can always cast those. But not only can you choose your background for your characters, you can also roll dice for their stats. Most D&D stats are strength, dexterity, constitution, wisdom, intelligence, and charisma. And based on your dice pick, you can put whatever score. So you roll a 20-sided dice for each of those. Obviously, certain ones need higher stats, like a sorcerer or a wizard would require higher intelligence. It's a spellcasting ability that goes into it, so you don't want to put your highest roll on strength for a wizard because that would be kind of silly. Unless you want to try to roleplay something like that, but there's not a whole lot of roleplaying in this game. That plays better in a tabletop experience, roleplaying does. But yeah, once you've created your characters, you start up the game, you get a small tutorial where they assign a few scenarios to each of those characters so you can kind of play and learn how the controls work, and then you're on the way to the story. So as I mentioned, you start in this town and you're hired as deputies. You get to travel around the town, buy things from different vendors, meet new people, and then you get to head out to that outpost for your starting mission. Now, the world map is kind of unique. There's icons around the map, and you choose which one you want to go to, and you hit travel. And you can either do a slow, normal, or fast pace for traveling. Faster you go, the more likely you are to be surprised by enemies if they ambush you. The slower you go, the more rest you'll need to take, the more camps you'll set up. In this, too, you travel and you need rations for camping. If you don't have rations, I think it causes a side effect. I have never run out of rations. I've always had them. I've never experienced what the negative would be. But every time you set up camp, you eat a ration per person. And then your group also hunts in the background and whatnot to kind of recover some as they're traveling too. I usually do a normal or fast pace. The funny thing is every time I've done normal, I've been surprised in combat, ambushed. When I've done fast, I've actually surprised enemies. Seems a little silly, a little backwards, but that could just be RNG, the random number generator, playing its part. But yeah, once you get to different areas, it's just like traveling in a city. You move around in that map, climb up slopes, things like that, find treasure boxes, crates, other types of loot, and fight enemies when you come across them. So I'm going to hop to it and just talk about the battle. So battles in this game are pretty cool. It's your basic turn-based combat. However, like D&D, your characters roll for initiative at the very beginning. So when combat's announced, there's dice rolls above each of your characters' heads, and then they get their dexterity bonus towards that too. Because like traditional D&D, you get a bonus towards your initiative. Now what initiative means, it's basically turn order. Whoever goes first typically has the highest initiative. Let's say that one of your characters, one of your archer types, so like a ranger, gets the highest initiative, and you decide to use your bow. Well, another thing from D&D, there's dark vision, or the lack thereof. If you're a certain race that has what they call dark vision, you see better in darkness. That plays a part into this game. So if you're fighting an enemy inside of a cave, and there's no torches lit or any type of light, if your person doesn't have dark vision, they'll be at what they call disadvantage. So when you take that shot, it rolls two dice, and because you're at a disadvantage, it takes the lesser of the two, and so you may not hit based on that. How D&D works is you roll a dice, D20, you get what they call an attack modifier to hit. So let's say you roll a 10, you have a modifier of 2, so your total number is a 12. If somebody has an armor class that's like 13 or higher, that's considered a miss. So if they have an armor class of 11 or so lower, then you'll hit them. So when you have disadvantage, you roll two dice, whatever the lower number is, plus your modifier, that's what your roll is. Now likewise, if you're in stealth, if you come across enemies and you're in hiding, as they call it, and you don't have a disadvantage due to the lighting, let's say you have dark vision and you're fighting in a cave and you're within range, and you go to attack that person, now you have advantage, which is basically the opposite of disadvantage. You roll two dice, it takes the highest. So, this game really kind of mimics the D&D atmosphere, as well as it probably can, in terms of the combat. I really truly like that. I think it's pretty well done. I made my people have dark vision. There was one character who did not. It was rather frustrating for a while because I had to light up areas around them. You can shoot a fireball or some sort of cantrip that's like a fire cantrip at torches and ignite them from afar too. So you can light up areas around people if there's things that can ignite. So there's ways to do it, but it is difficult. It adds some difficult challenge to it. I eventually bought an item for that character so they have dark vision. That item, they needed to do what they call attunement with it. So basically, they had to take an hour rest to get familiar with the item to where they can equip it proper and use that ability. That's what attunement does. So if you find an item that requires that, you have to take a short rest before it gives you the benefits of that item. Another thing about combat, not only can you do your standard turn-based combat where you shoot or stab things, pokey-poke, but this game has another advantage to it. Even though you're mostly looking down on your characters, you can look close to the ceiling and sometimes you'll find things that are hanging, and you can shoot those and cause them to fall on your enemies. So you can cause cave-ins on your enemies and things like that. Shoot baskets hanging from the ceiling. If there's an area that has like a cage that's suspended, you can shoot the rope that's holding the cage. It'll fall, smash anything underneath it. So environment does play a part in the combat as well. Another thing about combat in this game, so I talked about igniting torches from afar. That actually helped me quite a bit when I fought vampires in this. Turns out that vampires in this game have light sensitivity. Not really a surprise if you think about it. What that translates to in this game, though, not only do they roll a disadvantage when they try to attack you in the light, but every turn that they get, they take damage from the light. They basically get a pretty good sunburn every turn. So not only did I have to shoot them less with my spells and my arrows or stab them with my pokeboke, but they burn to a crisp a little bit quicker. And I was more thankful for it because vampires, when I encountered them, were pretty challenging. Now, if you decided to take a drink every time I refer to D&D during this episode, you might be a little buzzed right now at this point, but I'm going to mention D&D again. So not only did it take things like your dark vision into account, or the attunement, or the rolls and everything else from D&D? There are other aspects too. So like if you're having dialogue with an enemy and you're trying to deceive them that you're on their side through the dialogue options, one of your characters will roll insight. So whichever character has the highest for insight is automatically chosen. They roll for insight. What that means is that you can see the likelihood that your deception is going to work, like a percentage based. And then you can roll for one of your dialogue options that will basically deceive them. So if you want to roll for something like deception, it would talk about your deception skill. If you want to try to charm your way through, it'll base it off your charisma, your persuasion. And yeah, based on your roles when you're trying to do those dialogue options, you may not have to fight a boss, which is pretty darn cool. I tried to get past a vampire boss at one point. It didn't work. But I got past the boss prior to that, kind of a mini boss during that level, and I got through that without having to fight them. Now, granted, I missed some of the, probably some awesome loot, so pick and choose what you do. But when I fought the vampire boss, it was a pain in the butt, to say the least. I actually lost and had to reload. Also, real quick, when you choose character traits at the beginning of the game for those characters you make, they do play a part in the dialogue. It won't really change the outcome of your conversation, but I made somebody who mostly cared about themselves. They were pretty self-centered, and their survivability was pretty important to them. During the dialogue, they act kind of fearful when it's a challenge because of that. Some people are like, yeah, let's help these people because I made them care about other people. And this person says, we should run. I want to live to see another day. Pretty much every conversation plays into part of that. And it's cool how they do that too. But with all of this, we talked about the world, we talked about the traveling, we talked about the battles. And I'm not going to go too far into the story because, again, I don't want to spoil anything. So I'm going to move to my score. Now, as much as I've praised this game, I'm going to give it a 7.5. I have my reasons. I like it a lot. The developer, publisher, have done a great job. They've always been very transparent. They said that they were going to have that wipe to where save files wouldn't work with it. They had that. They've done some extras, which I'll talk about in a minute. They're fantastic. Best backed Kickstarter I've ever had. So why a 7.5? Well, it pains me to say, there, even though this is based off of D&D, there's probably not going to be a whole lot of replayability. Once you know the story, you lose some of the aspect for the main campaign. So unless they add DLC or anything along the lines to, like, a campaign editor, I'm probably not going to play it once I beat it. I can re-roll new characters with different classes or different abilities, but ultimately I'll still be fighting the same battles that are already kind of staged. There's no random battle. I mean, there are. When you're traveling, you might encounter a random group, but all the story-based battles, I'll know where they're at. I'll know how to avoid certain things. I'll already know all the ins and outs. So replayability probably cost this game about 1 to 2 points. I don't think that it's going to be something replayable, and that's disappointing based on the fact that it's D&D. This could change when I talk about another feature here in a minute, and you'll see what I mean. But as of right now, I'm basing this off of the current day one release that you're listening to. Another complaint, and this also plays into the replayability, the game is ultimately a bit linear for me. I wasn't expecting open world, and you do have the freedom to travel to different areas you've already been, but you can't really go out of your way to explore places that aren't equipped to the story or to one of the side quests. At least not that I've really experienced, so it's kind of disappointing in that regard. And then that brings me to my third complaint, the side quests. The side quests in this game are pretty bland. Not to say that they're awful. They offer you some pretty cool stuff. They're pretty much rinse and repeat, like most RPG-type games. There's a board in the game that gives you quests. You read it. It tells you to go somewhere you've already been. It tells you that you have to retrieve an item in one of the areas that you've been at. And you go there and you fight a battle. And that's pretty much it. You take that item that you found, you go back to the town, you turn it into the side quest board, and you get yourself whatever reward was posted, which is usually true to D&D, gems and some items, some scrolls, things like that. But it's kind of rinse and repeat. There are some cool side quests that do pop up, but they're based on your character's backgrounds. So at best, you'll have, what, maybe four of them throughout the entire game that you play. Like, one of them was a character that was a student of somebody. That person decided to include them in their will when they passed. So then you had to deal with the children of that person. Some real world struggles right there. But it was a unique experience based on that person's background. So those few negative aspects, I'm not a huge fan of, and I think that that's why this puts it to a 7.5. I love the dice rolls. You can even customize your dice. I love the battles. At no point have I ever really felt that they were too easy. You can make them easy if you skip over certain areas that are lower level and then come back to them, but at no point did I ever feel like they weren't challenging enough. There were some things that was pretty obvious to me, such as lighting, that with those vampires, I mean, obviously light can probably cause harm to vampires. So, I mean, when you see those things, you kind of figure it out pretty quick. Another thing I liked about this game, when I played Divinity Original Sin 2, I hated a lot of it. I loved it. It was a great game. I hated it, though, because they threw puzzles in there, which were frustrating. Super frustrating. There was one towards the end of the game where you had to fight a battle of non-stop enemies. They would just keep coming at you, and you had to figure out an order to flip levers. You had to do them in a certain order, and there was about 15 to 25 different levers. I ended up cheating because I didn't want to have to deal with it. We lost the first battle I was playing with my friends, and we had to do the battle again. We decided to cheat just to figure out what levers to do. Unnecessary repetitiveness and frustrating. This game, I have yet to encounter a puzzle that wasn't easy to figure out. Now, that could be negative for people who really love puzzles. I don't particularly like them, so that plays into my hand. There's also some abilities I really enjoy. When I decided to show this game to a friend of mine, I streamed a few seconds of it, and I cast flight on a teammate of mine. I made them fly up into the sky, and then I decided to break concentration, which means that the spell would end, and they fell to their death into lava. It was fantastic. Some of the other complaints that I've heard about this game, people don't like the fact that you're stuck with the same four characters. If one of them die, it's game over. That doesn't bother me. It is technically their story. As they progress, they get higher ranks within the council. Completely makes sense to me that they wanted to limit it down to just the same four people, because it's basically their story. That doesn't bother me, but that is one of the Steam complaints that I've seen. So I mentioned how awesome this company was during the progression of everything. There is one last thing to mention about them. They invented something called Dungeon Maker for it. Pretty basic on what it is. You can create your own dungeons. So it does create a little bit of replayability, and I'm hoping that they eventually further it. And they've made suggestions that they might, but there's no guaranteed promises. And of course, if they were set on something, this company would promise it. So I'm going to take that as a maybe. Now, the Dungeon Maker, I did play about 20 minutes into it. I didn't play a whole lot into it, but I made a small crypt. You get to make your own little path, put together little rooms, get to add little pieces of furniture. In this one, I had tombs. I made walls. I put traps down. I put down enemies. I put the starting position for the heroes. I even could choose the levels of the heroes. You basically create your kind of own one-off. Now, the promises that they've kind of hinted to, but they're not really making, could be a game changer. They've suggested that down the line, if they have time to progress this, that they might not only allow people to share their own dungeons with other players, but they might also allow you to have a group that progresses through the dungeons. So let's say I download a few different dungeons that people have made. I have the same characters go through Dungeon A, Dungeon B, Dungeon C. And what they get from Dungeon A, they get to keep. What they get from Dungeon B, they get to keep. What they get from Dungeon C, they get to keep. If that happens, and if there's some consequence to where if they die, they lose loot, things like that, I'm totally sold. I think that would be awesome. I hope they do it. The small dungeon that I put together just to test it out worked like a charm. I had a four-man group just like normal. Three of them got knocked out because I put a little too high of challenge for the monsters. But we won through the luck of the rolls, and I was able to recover them, bring them back to life before they died. It was fantastic. I didn't set off the trap. My rogue figured it out prior to running it over, and it worked well. There was hidden walls, everything. So if they do this, it will add a lot of replayability. But as of right now, it's just for your own amusement, I believe. You can make your own dungeons. You can add your own squad to do it, your own four-man team. But it's not going to interest me enough to come back to it. So as of right now, that's not a huge replayability factor. Now, I didn't really mention any bugs. There are a few, but I have a feeling they're going to work out pretty soon. I had one bug that I couldn't click on certain units and make them move for a little bit after that 10 gigabyte patch during the 2 weeks. Haven't had that happen since, so about a week and a half now. No problems. The only thing I've encountered since the patch that I know that still doesn't really work, there was two items, a statue and a plaque, that said I could click on them. I tried to click on them. It wouldn't work. But originally, when I was trying to click on things and move my units with that original bug, I couldn't even, once I moved a unit to like jumping over a cliff, they would freeze there for 5-10 minutes. It was not even, maybe not that long. It felt like 5 minutes, probably more like 2 minutes. But now that has been cleared. The only thing again is that there's two items that I've tried to click on to get some history lesson or lore out of that wouldn't let me. I'm sure that'll be fixed within no time. Just because I'm playing the full content patch early and I'm recording this a day early does not mean that they have all the patches that are coming out for the original release. And I'm sure they're going to stick with it and make some modifications after the release, official release too. That concludes the bonus episode for Solasta. If you enjoy this, send me an email at my email, nomixgaming@gmail.com. Also, let me know if you would rather have more spoiler editions. If I don't get feedback, I don't know really what you guys like to listen to, so I'm just grabbing at straws here. So let me know, and I do intend to do more bonus episodes in the future. In theory, when I made this podcast, I would have liked to see it as a weekly podcast rather than bi-weekly. I have two kids. One's a little bit over 2 years old now, and I have another one that's about 4 months. So real life comes in the way of recording episodes. I play a lot of games regardless, but it's really the recording and editing that I have trouble finding time for. Sounds silly, but I play games when I'm half asleep, which is why I fell asleep during Fae Tactics, partially. And the other part is if you listen to that episode, you know why. So if you like bonus episodes, let me know. Just so I know what to kind of strive for listeners. And again, if you have any suggestions or want to hear about a specific game, shoot me an email as well. I also mentioned that I might go into spoiler on this game. I'm going to try to beat it first. If you guys want to hear a spoiler edition, shoot me a message. I will gladly make a spoiler edition only bonus. Doesn't bother me. I just want to complete the game before I really come up with that. I'm about 40 hours in. They say it's going to be about a 40-50 hour game, so I must be getting close to the end. That or else I just have taken a long time, which is possible, getting there. But I am going to see this game to the end. I enjoy it that much, and for 7.5, that does not mean it's a bad game. I still highly recommend checking it out. It might be your cup of tea. And I hope you guys will join me at my next normal episode when I review Kenshi. See you then.